Some of you, I've noticed today, have creatures who are keeping you company, which is quite wonderful. It is kind of remarkable, this way of being on retreat together. Both somewhat intimate and also a little strange. So, as you are well aware, we have many, many wonderful teachers whose teachings we can access through Dharma Seed, Audio Dharma, various retreat centers that create archives. And really, it's such a rich resource, and I encourage you to take advantage of it. I was listening to a talk by the British monk Ajahn Sujito. He says, when the mind hits dukkha, it scatters, it crumbles, it leaps out. I think that's such a good description of what happens when our minds are triggered, either by desire or by aversion. The mind scatters, it crumbles, it leaps out. And the process begins of, if only my neighbors were more quiet, if only my partner this or that, if only. So we really want to build some resilience, some patience, both with ourselves and with the world that often feels like it rubs up against us. So this is what wise attention is all about. It's really being willing to lengthen our attention span and stay present. Stay present with that inner critic who is shouting at us or niggling at us, and say, I see you. Stay present with the mind that longs for something to comfort us. Some person, some set of circumstances, some all-wise teacher, some book, some experience, to stay present with that feeling of longing, of desire, of wanting, and get to know it. What does wanting feel like in the body, in the mind, and in the heart? Ajahn Sujito says, wise attention is about lengthening your attention span and taking things in. Otherwise, it will not be possible to have careful attention. So we know how easy it is to be part of this speeded up world where things seem to happen instantaneously. We push a button and send a message and expect a message within the next few minutes and become impatient when the person we're corresponding with seems to be somewhere else and doing something else. But is it possible to pause, to listen, to take things in, to move more deliberately through the day? And so this is a training in goodwill. Recognizing the commonality of our shared vulnerability. Recognizing that we all experience the challenges and difficulties of aging, of illness, of loss, of grief. When we open to these truths, when we take them in, we're developing wise understanding, right view, which naturally gives rise to wise intention, rise right thought, where we actually see that we can make a difference to lessen the suffering in the world. We can replace thoughts of ill will with thoughts of kindness. We can practice renunciation. We can awaken compassion. And then we can put our compassion into action through wise speech, through wise or right action and right livelihood. So these are the first five path factors in the Noble Eightfold Path. And they bring us right up to wise or right effort. So that I want to read you a passage from Sayadaw Utejaniya, who speaks about our meditation in a very particular way. He says, "We can start our meditation with great intentions and a lot of effort. But say you sit for a period of time, what will happen? Quite often the right effort has dropped, and so has the wisdom. There's too much quiet, the mind sinks into the stillness. This is what happens when it is quiet for too long. Dullness enters because effort and wisdom drop off. What we are looking at is the effect of the experience, which is the quietness. We are not looking at the mind that is working, which is the awareness. Awareness is the home of the mind, so we must stay at home. If you know the mind is working, then it doesn't get drawn into the object. But when awareness starts to drop off, we don't notice because we are absorbed into the object. Thinking logically about this, if we sit and we're alert, why does the mind become dull and then even more dull? It is because we aren't looking to see if the mind is still awake and aware. If meditation is about cultivating good qualities of mind, then the more good qualities there are, the more energized the mind should become." So, this is part of wise effort, wise attention. Continuity of awareness. And being able to identify the moment when some trigger, some hindrance overwhelms the mind, like dullness, confusion, aversion, restlessness, boredom, doubt. So I was just reflecting on this beautiful poem by an 11th century Buddhist nun, Izumi Shikibu. She writes, unfortunately, I have a proliferation of notebooks. She writes, "The moon at midday." Now, the moon at dawn, mid sky. I knew myself completely, no part left out. I knew myself completely, no part left out. So this journey we're on, this journey through life, it's a mysterious unfolding. But we can befriend ourselves on the journey. And each day that is our practice, to befriend ourselves. Care for ourselves. Greg Kramer writes in his beautiful book, he says, it takes effort to go against the stream of personal habit. So that's worth thinking about for a moment. Is knowing ourselves, knowing what makes us comfortable? Or is knowing ourselves, knowing which conditions support us letting go of personal habits in the service of growing wisdom? So this wise effort. You know, the world of sensory phenomena surrounds us. At any given moment, we are receiving a stream of sense impressions, sounds and sights, smells, thoughts, emotions, memories, plans, projects. Because we don't live in a cave, none of us. I don't see anyone joining the Zoom room from a cave. And of course, it could be a very nice cave. We live in the midst of the world, sensory experience. And so our challenge and our opportunity is to relate skillfully to sense experience. So this is where we can easily fall into the habit of ayoniso manasikara, unwise consideration. The sense objects stir up unwholesome states of mind. And we know that. That happens. So the first of the four great endeavors in wise effort is to guard our senses. And And if guarding our senses sounds somewhat monastic or challenging, it's just to know that befriending ourselves, accompanying ourselves through life, knowing ourselves completely, no part left out, is knowing how to guard our senses and what makes sense for us. Because when we bring mindfulness to the encounter with sense experience, we have the opportunity to interrupt the proliferation, the I-making, I need, I want, I will be, I will become, that often comes as a result of that contact. So I want to show you a photograph. And this is a photograph Let's see how I can do this. Here we are. So do you see this photograph here? So what you're looking at there is a hazelnut orchard near Courtney. 6 acres, over 300 trees. And this was one of my mother's great endeavors in her life, was to create this orchard. And she had even found a photograph of an orchard in Oregon where the sunlight was slanting through the trees and the rows were neat and straight. And all the trees were in full leaf and laden with nuts. And that was her vision, to recreate something like that on a north-facing slope on sandy soil in the Comox Valley. So she devoted years to her project. And this is a beautiful picture of my mother. And you can see the hazelnuts in their husks at her feet. A friend has been visiting and they're having wine and bread and cheese for lunch. And you can sense, perhaps in that photo, a sense of accomplishment, achievement, contentment. So I just share those photos with you as an example of how we devote our energy in life to projects. We have a vision, we devote ourselves, and then maybe it doesn't work out quite the way we planned. And I think for me, observing my mother over the years and her labor and dedication to this project of the nut orchard. And I've been recently reading some of her journal entries about opening up the farm and March and trying to get the systems going and trying to deal with all the creatures that wanted to eat the nuts. The Steller's Jay, the deer that came and rubbed against the trees. So I have a deep admiration for my mother and her dedication to this project, and my father as well. And then at some point, they realized that no matter how much they tried to prevent the bear from getting into the field, they were no match for the bears, who could smell the ripening nuts, came, reached up along arm and broke off the branches, sat down and ate the nuts, husk, shell, and all, destroying the trees in the process. So the year was about 2000 when they decided they just couldn't do it anymore. And luckily they had a friend, Melda Buchanan, a great activist and environmentalist in the Comox Valley, who suggested they give their property to be a park. And that's what they did. And to me, it was remarkable to observe my mother letting go of her vision, arranging to have all the trees cut down, and completely, in a sense, abandoning all that identity that she had accumulated in this vision of herself as an organic hazelnut farmer on Vancouver Island. So I give that story, I think, as an example of how life brings us opportunities to let go. And letting go is part of our path and our journey, the Noble Eightfold Path. So the second great endeavor is to abandon unwholesome states that have already arisen. So abandoning the states of mind of clinging, attachment, aversion, delusion. And how do we abandon them? Well, there's very beautifully laid out strategies for us. But one way is simply to see them as entanglements. And the third of the four great endeavors is to arouse wholesome states that have not yet arisen. I think that's why I emphasized gratitude today. Because we, most of us, live lives that are pretty stable, pretty secure. And it's easy to become complacent about our good fortune. And perhaps the most key piece to our good fortune is that we have been born in a time when these teachings are freely available in so many different forms. And nowadays, you can join a meditation group in another part of the world. You can tune into retreats in Eastern Canada or the United States, England, France. So to awaken a feeling of gratitude is to arouse a wholesome state that may not yet have arisen. And once it has arisen, to maintain and perfect that wholesome state, to let it grow. So just returning for a moment to abandoning arisen unwholesome states, I just want to speak a bit about desire. Sense desire. And it is said, according to these teachings, that if we can practice tuning in to the truth of impermanence, that easily and quite quickly undermines our desire for sense experience. And of course, this doesn't mean that we can't enjoy a walk in the woods, a nice meal with friends, but that when we see those experiences for what they are, arising, having a certain duration, and passing away, seeing them in the fullness of their impermanent nature allows us to be present, allows us to experience them, even delight in them, without clinging. So to bring impermanence and awareness of impermanence into our practice, this also is wise attention, recognizing the changing nature of all conditioned phenomena. When I lived in Courtney, I lived in a wonderful old house on 2nd Street. And I had a little gray tabby cat named Fern. And I just adored this cat. As you know, animals can take such an important place in our hearts. But I was called inwardly to go and be on staff at the Insight Meditation Society in Barrie. And I arranged to rent out my house to a family who had a dog, but it seemed like my cat and the dog got along pretty well. But after I'd been away for some months, I learned that Ruthie, who was taking care of my house and house sitting, or actually renting it, she had also begun taking care of her sister's dog. And this dog didn't get along with my cat. And Fern disappeared. And this was kind of heartbreaking for me, not knowing what had happened to Fern. And when I came back after my time away, I went around the neighborhood and asked people if they had seen the cat. And I even considered consulting a pet psychic to see what had happened to Fern. But the sort of unsolved mystery of my little gray tabby cat's disappearance continued, and I just had no idea what had happened, if he had just gone off and maybe found a new home and new people to love him. And then some years later, I sold the house, and the house was torn down, which was also kind of a letting go to know that had happened. And the woman who had rented the house after it was sold, she told me that they had found a cat skeleton in the foundations. And I thought, well, now I know what happened. So this recognizing that this beautiful little cat, this creature came into my life, offered me so much comfort, so much enjoyment, so much delight. And then changing conditions, Fern returning to the house and dying there. So there's this sense that the story of all these arisings and passing away are like many teachings to us, opening us to the truth of change and reminding us that when we hold on, when we attach, When we make a story about me and mine and who I am, then we're really setting ourselves up for suffering, and we're impeding the growth of our wisdom. So right effort and self-knowing means establishing the conditions in our own lives for the arising of wholesome states of mind. So these wholesome states of mind are not just states that we might access through meditation, deep concentration, tranquility, rapture, but certainly these are wholesome states, all the factors of awakening, investigation, energy. But it's really knowing what brings us happiness. What brings us the kind of happiness that is an expression of wise understanding and wise intention. So that might be for some, it might be volunteering, caring for animals. It might be taking on some responsibility with grandchildren. It might be caring for the environment. It might be spending time with children whom we're not related to, but we feel a connection to. So really looking for those supportive conditions to awaken and arouse the happiness of generosity, the happiness of being of service. I was teaching mindfulness to some grade 2 and grade 3 students last fall, and it was so, so delightful. But there was one little boy, Oliver. And one day when I arrived, he was out in the hallway working at a table on something by himself. And he came up to me as I was about to go into the class. He thanked me. He said, "I really like it when you come to our class. I really like it." And then as I was actually preparing some materials for an art project, and he said to me, "Are you hoping for a white Christmas?" And just this gift of a child's trust was just such an amazing experience. And of course, the motivation that arises out of that experience is to look for new opportunities to teach mindfulness to children, to cultivate any creative ideas I have for combining mindfulness with art making or storytelling. So we have this precious life energy. How are we expending it? Arousing these wholesome mental states is a skillful use of this precious life energy. In the Zen tradition, outside the Zendo, there is a wooden board hanging. And as you may know, practitioners are called with a series of cascading strikes on the wooden board. with the space between the strikes diminishing until it's just a series of tapping sounds falling into silence. And my friend Eric Bedard explained to me that these ritual striking motions on the han, that's the word, they're meant to remind the listener that the time we have remaining in our lives to do good, to abandon unwholesome states of mind, is diminishing with each day. And usually inscribed on this wood board are the words, awake, awake. The days and the nights are relentlessly passing. How well are you spending your time? So, Izumi Shikibu, watching the moon at dawn, solitary, mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out. Greg Kramer, it takes effort to go against this stream of personal habit. So to know ourselves completely requires courage. It requires commitment and compassion. I think I'll just stop there for a moment and let's just sit quietly for a few minutes. Let these thoughts and images and words settle in. Thank you so much for listening. So I'll just sit for a few minutes.